When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Day off, mate.
I think that yawn sets the tone nicely for the podcast, for the game we're talking about, to be honest.
Yeah.
Hello, welcome to Be a Terrier, Stephen Chicken here, joined down the line as usual by David Halchick, who's just finished a big yawn that I think has lasted since Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, well, you say that. I think we and you felt there are lots of things to talk about, but perhaps they're not based on incidents in the game, which was, by design, was, they'll not sell many DVDs of that in the club shop, will they?
Huddersfield Town 0, Watford 0. And yeah, I think it's probably the most pleased you'll ever see a crowd, a journalist, an analyst, a manager come away from a game that's finished 0-0 at home to a team who are only sort of four places ahead of them in the table. I think we would have had this earmarked and did have this earmarked, particularly after they lost to Cardiff as a sort of a bit of a must win. But then since then, you've had the Leeds game and you've had more injuries, more absences, everything piling up. And we'd sort of glimpsed behind the curtain. We had a chat before the game and said, well, whatever happens here, we're going to have to hit pause on the criticism of Darren Moore because he's not playing with a full deck here. Not as a euphemism. that's not a knock on him, but you know, he didn't have a full squad to choose from by any means. Literally half the squad was out, and it's like, well, I think it was putting together the predicted lineup on Friday after the press conference. It was like, bloody hell, if they can get anything out of this, that's kind of a miracle done, you know, a win out of this. And I think he went the only way that he could, Darren Moore, that very defence first, clean sheet first, 5-4-1. And I think when you're playing for a clean sheet and a 0-0, first of all, there's always a risk that, and we saw it plenty under plenty of other managers, there's always a risk that it catches up to you. Because it's hard to resist a team for 90 minutes, even if that is your one and only aim. But I thought, to be fair, all 13 players in action for Town stuck to their jobs incredibly well throughout the game.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was 43% of the first team squad was out, and of those that were left, there was a couple that they're in the first team squad, Steve, but are they in the first team squad, if you know what I mean? No manager in the league could cope with that, really, and expect to get something. I mean, if Manchester City lost 43% of their first team squad, they'd feel it. You know, it's so it did become, when we were talking beforehand, it did become, right, can they put together anything out of this game to either get themselves over the line in a 0-0 or lose well? That was the other phrase we used, can they lose well, you know? And I think what was quite surprising for me was that they did manage to carve out a bit at the other end as well. I know it was quite a flip round, really, because Watford had, I think, 70-odd% of possession, something like that. And we're used to lots and lots of games where Town have loads of possessions because teams let them have it, you know, and could say, right, we don't think you're going to hurt us. But here I thought what was interesting was, for all their possession and for all their passing and for all their pressing, Watford didn't really create much. And they didn't really create much, because I think Town, how many times did you see a line of five and a line of four and you shall not pass. And it worked. It worked. It was. We talked last week about one of the most ill-disciplined halves of football we've ever seen from any Huddersfield Town team. And here you had the complete opposite, really. A properly disciplined and structured 90 minutes of football. And yeah, even I was mega invested at the end and just wanted to get them over the line because they thoroughly deserved that point. You know, they did look, there were one or two moments up the other end where you could see they were trying to create. And interesting that we had a game with this low XG, etc. And me and you came away pretty damn positive about it.
Yeah, 0.1 for Town and 0.4 for Watford, which is incredible. And also tells you 0-0 was the right result. I think the only save that sort of springs to mind for Lee Nichols was one from the corner of the box where he was a bit unsighted and it was swerving, but he sort of pushed it back out. That's the only one I can think of. There's a couple of good interventions. Tom Lee's last second did incredibly well to get in front of his man, the Watford number 9, and head it away. Otherwise, he would have had a tap in, which would have been a heartbreaker because I think it was literally an injury time or just before. But yeah, just it was just the level of concentration, and particularly from some players who I think needed that kind of performance, and Darren Moore needed that kind of performance from his players as well. I think he was the big winner out of this in that he needed a performance that shows, look, I do know how to set a side up. I do know how to keep a clean sheet. I can get the players to follow my instructions. We always talk about these kinds of games as a coach's performance, but I don't think that's ever been more apt than here, just as he was coming under fire for some of the selection decisions in the previous games.
Yeah, definitely. Weirdly, very different games, very different results, very different circumstances. But I was watching him on the touchline quite a lot, and he was very involved in that game. There was a lot of adjustments. There was a lot of changing people's roles just as individuals were coming into the game for Watford, etc. Getting very tight, going man to man at times. It reminded me of that West Brom game that the Cowleys were in charge of. Do you remember where they basically coached? They broke it down because of the drinks breaks. They broke it down into four quarters and they just coached everyone right through that game. It reminded me weirdly of that. But Darren Moore didn't have anything like the personnel that the Cowleys had to call on in that game, and they won 2-1. But I think, you know, like Watford had 71% possession and only 9 shots. Town had 5 shots. Town had 2 shots on target. Watford had 3. I mean, that's a measure of kind of stale possession against a team who were actually pretty good in possession, the possession they had.
Yeah, and there were a couple of openings as well. One where a nice move they put together where it got to Ben Jackson, they put in a cross and there's just no one there to finish it. There's another one where Matty Pearson flicked it on for Tom Lees. And again, they don't show up in the XG because there's no shot at the end of it. But they were two of the better openings Town had. I mean, I think it's worth running through a few individuals.
Oh, definitely.
But do we have anything more to say on Darren Moore? Because I think potentially this tough period isn't quite over yet. I think certainly against Hull, I think he's hoping to get a couple more players back. He was talking about Josh Cromer potentially back. Obviously, Jonathan Hogg will be back from suspension. And Josh Ruffles back from injury late on in this game. David Kasumu was close but didn't quite make it. So there's a few players coming in there, but it does feel, particularly going away from home, there is a and then the fixtures after that being Southampton and Sunderland, which aren't easy games, there could be a little bit more standing by Darren Moore to do. And I should say as well, on that note, I thought the fans were excellent on Saturday. I don't always, but I thought the fans totally got it and really rallied behind the team in the circumstances. But do you think that if this difficult spell continues, Darren Moore will continue to get that kind of support?
I would hope so. I think the next few games are, he's going to get a few players back, but you've got one or two who've been injured and need some football. It's not like they're going to come back completely ready to do 90 minutes in the first team and in top form. So I don't think we can sit here and pretend that just because he's got a couple of more names to choose from, things are going to be much better. So I do think it's still going to be trying to get what you can out in the next couple of games rather than actually sort of going for it. I think when you talk about Darren Moore and Darren Moore's position, I thought this game proved, when we'll go into some individuals, there are a lot of individuals there that did things we've not seen from them before and did roles we've not seen from them before and did them well. Now that's a sign of good coaching. That's a sign of being worked on. So we have to acknowledge that. But I think you can only really still talk about supporting Darren Moore in terms of the wider issue, which is, I still think, Steve, that if Town, I mean, if the alternative is Town go, okay, we're going to press the button here and we don't think Darren Moore's the man for it. Okay, all right. Well, you're on your sixth manager in 18 months. Your new owner's on his third manager in less than six. That's not the sign of a well-run club with a plan, is it? And I think, if I'm honest, I think they need to stick with Darren Moore for the minute for lots of reasons and on lots of levels. It may get worse, you know. This may be a high point for the next couple of weeks, even with some players back, because that Hull game is extremely tricky. And then remind me where they go. It's another really bad one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Southampton at home.
Yes.
On the other side of the international break, and then away to Sunderland.
So. Which, that is three fixtures in a row that, to be honest with you, I think if they got one more point from Steve, I think in the circumstances, we'd have to say that's not actually a bad result.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Hull are flying at home. They're a very different prospect at home. Southampton are Southampton. And I think the three demoted teams from the Premier League, unfortunately, I think you have to write off games against them. And I know one of them will hurt more than the other two, but we've done that game at Elland Road to death. But Premier League, ex-Premier League teams are just so far above Championship teams in terms of their squad and their structure and their and how they play. You just kind of have to write that 18 points off a season. And then Sunderland, who are a weird side, but the one thing they do is score goals. You know, they do score goals. And I just, it may get worse before it get better. But I think fans don't have to be long term. We don't. We're not telling any fans what they have to think or how they have to be. But I just think at the minute, for me, until Darren Moore gets to January and gets some support around him and has, nobody ever has a full squad. That never exists. It's a thing in football, that, isn't it? Once he's got a full squad, there's always somebody out. But when he gets a proper squad of players to pick a first team from, you know, in back end of January and into February, I think that's when we really have to judge him. At the moment, it's case of being patient and just trying to get through that international break. I know we've said it before, but I think the more I look at it, the more I think it's probably coming at a good time, on lots of levels for Town. So yeah, the next three look quite ugly on paper, but let's just see. I think a point from those nine, weirdly, would be, I think I'd be quite fine. But I keep coming back to something you quite rightly said a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Darren Moore, which was, there are ways to lose, you know. You need to lose the right way, and they did not lose the right way against Cardiff. They did not lose the right way against Leeds. So if they played Southampton and lost 1-0 but played really well, we'd be fine. But if they play Southampton and lose, get done for five, that's not the right way. So we'll see.
It's I think I agree with most of that. It's Swansea away as well, straight after Sunderland on the Wednesday, and then Swansea on the Saturday, which isn't great. But I think, weirdly, that most of the December fixtures look winnable, to be honest.
Like,
they've got all of the mid-table sides basically in December. Before they then have Leicester on New Year's Day, and then the we're into the second half of the season from 29th of December. But I think it is. We said when Darren Moore arrived, it's just scraped through to January. And again, the results have gone Town's way again at the weekend. And I think if they can get through to the January transfer window with their heads still above water, then fine. And I think that's all you could reasonably have expected. Maybe a little, given the injuries, if you told us the injuries that they were going to have at this point, I think is the most you could reasonably have expected. So we're sort of, are hitting pause on criticising Darren Moore to a certain extent at the moment. It's not to say that that is completely off the table forever, and it will come to the fore again at some point. But I think at the moment, I think we're a bit sympathetic to his position.
Yeah.
Let's go through some of those individuals then. I think probably best to run through the team. Ben Jackson, my man of the match, we're starting with here. I know everyone went for Silver Thomas, who wasn't far behind for me, but I thought Ben Jackson had his best game in a Town shirt, playing the right back role, which he's played as often as not this season, really. But I think has had sort of mixed fortunes in that role. To be fair, he's probably had mixed fortunes in every role. I wrote a friend of ours came to the game on Saturday with my wife, and I wrote a little guide to all the Town players, and I won't run through what I said about all of them, but Ben Jackson, I wrote Swiss Army knife footballer, can play anywhere, never above a 6 out of 10. But he was the first player to get an 8 from me in the draft of my player ratings. There are a few who got 8 in the end, but he was the first one I put that number next to. I thought he was outstanding defensively, and looked a threat going forward, but that final pull not quite there, or a Watford defender would get across. But very encouraging for him, particularly given that Town have a bit of an issue at right back.
Yeah, I really liked his performance. I think if you look at some of the stats sites, Steve, I don't hold much stock in these ratings because they're basically algorithm driven. But if you look at a lot of the stats sites, he was the top performer on the day. I think Who Scored and SofaScore had him as Town's best player on the day. But what I thought was interesting was his heat map on the day is quite... It's just so right back, it's untrue. And the thing about Ben Jackson, the criticism we kind of had of him was, A, you're exactly right, Swiss Army knife of a footballer in terms of he's played a bit all over. And as a result, when he gets on the pitch, he has this tendency to just sort of wander out of position, or you pop up and you think, well, who just did that? Oh, it was Ben Jackson. What's he doing there? Whereas this heat map is just a proper traditional. If you were to say, show me the perfect heat map for a right back, this is it. And it was that sort of game, don't get me wrong. But, you know, 4 tackles, 57 touches in that position. I thought he was really good. I think it's his best game in a Town shirt. By a long way. You, I know, thought it was his best game in a Town shirt, because I just thought it was his most, we're going to use this word a lot, but just his most disciplined, just stuck to his task really, really well. And who knows, Town may have found themselves an answer to a little problem for a few weeks in that position.
He's an interesting player because I think more than a lot of players that have come through that academy, you look at him and you think he's got a bit of technique, he's got the passing range, he's very athletic, he's genuinely two-footed, he can shoot. He does have a bit of everything, but he's just never quite... We've spent years waiting for him to sort of put it all together. And you just sort of hope if he can get a run in the side now, even if it is in that right-back role, just to allow Sorba to push further forward, then, or even a wing-back role if they went 3-4-3.
Do you feel his... It's not an apt comparison because they're not similar positions, but I just feel every time I see Ben Jackson that just his ceiling is a little bit higher than a lot have come through. So, like, when I see Scott High, me and you quite like Scott High. We think there's a midfielder there. But I just feel like Jackson's ceiling in his role is just a bit higher than Ben Jackson, purely because, like you say, he's got lovely technique, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he's got all the raw ingredients. He just needs a bit of egg to bind it together, kind of thing. So give Ben Jackson an egg is my conclusion there. Yeah, or a bit of royal icing if you want a nicer analogy. But no, I do. I think sometimes you get these players who seem fairly unremarkable until they're sort of 23, 24, 25, and then suddenly something just clicks and they're suddenly...
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I remember, always a Liverpool example for me, but I remember Jamie Carragher, like, was all... played central midfield, defensive midfield, right back, left back, and was just sort of... similar kind of way, and was just sort of a jobbing player, and it's like, oh, he'll always be a squad player, but he'll never be the first choice kind of, he'll just fill in for whoever's injured. And then suddenly Rafa Benitez went, no, you're a centre back now, and he became one of the best centre backs in the Premier League for the next 10 years, so, or 7 years. So I sort of think, I'm not saying Jacko's going to go and be a centre back now, but you get my point. You know, sometimes a player who seems relatively like, where is his role? What is he going to do? Is he just going to be a squad player for his career? Can suddenly become overnight this undroppable player in a particular role, and perhaps that can happen for him. I think he's definitely got, as we say, all the tools for it, but it's just putting them together. The centre backs, I think, we'll talk about as a unit, really, but Pearson, I think, has been probably one of Town's most consistent players this season. I think not playing against Leeds was a mistake, as we talked about. Hellick, likewise, has had a couple of odd moments, but has generally been very reliable. And Tom Lees is the new one in the mix here, having missed the start of the season injured. I mean, I've been advocating for Pearson, Hellick, Ruffles as the back three of choice, just purely based on the more recent evidence, because I think that unit looked really good earlier in the season. And I know Darren Moore likes to have a left footer in that back line, so I wouldn't count it out just yet. But we know that those three on paper, three of Town's most dependable players, and they were again.
Yeah, I just thought with those three that we've talked a lot before the season, during the season, everything, that on paper Town looked like they have a good defence with those three, and they had a good defence with those three on the pitch playing okay. You know, they just did what they do. And I think Matty Pearson on the ball is perhaps not the person you want. Certainly I never want to see him being used as the out ball ever again, as we mentioned after that Coventry game. But he does have his uses in games like these, because he does just do as he's told to do, as he's told us both during press conferences, Steve. So yeah, I thought they were absolutely fine. I thought the problem they've had sometimes is when it's just been like the Alamo, you know. Yeah. But they actually had players around them helping them out, and they could kind of just concentrate on the duties they want to do, really. And it worked.
Yeah, I think if you want three players who will defend the width of a box, they're probably the three that you want. But they obviously need the protection. We talked before, there's not a lot of pace in that Town back line, and those three, none of them particularly quick. So I think you do need to have... I think this is a bit of a feeling out period for Moore as well, is he'll be getting used to the players and what they can and can't do. And I think he's probably learning that if you give those three a bit of protection on the counter-attack and on the flanks, then they'll do the bit in the job, along with Lee Nichols, by the way. They will do the job in the box as well as anyone in this division. Speaking of defending the flanks, Yuta Nakayama, we talked about, had an absolute nightmare against Cardiff, and I don't think he was much better against Leeds. Some would tell you he was even worse. We talked last week about his concentration issues. I think that's a word that Darren Moore used a lot after the game, was the concentration, and something that he praised was the way the players sort of paid attention and were very diligent throughout the game. And I thought Yuta was chief among those players. I thought he did stay switched on, stuck to his job. And even, and it's often the way, isn't it, that you see a player who they have that more disciplined game, and actually because they're being that much more disciplined, it then allows them to have those little moments on the ball where they get the crowd cooing. I think he knocked it over a player's head at one point. There's another where he just sort of found two men in front of him and just went, I'll just lift this over the man there. Yeah. And find Jaheim Headley. It was much better from you.
He was up against Asprea a lot, and Asprea is he's a weird player. I'm not a huge believer, to be honest with you. I know lots of people are telling me he's as good as João Pedro was at the same time for Watford, but he's very much a highlights reel player for me. And I felt like, I don't know, it was the first time I felt like Yuta had worked out who he was playing against, and just felt, okay, I can do this, no problem. Because there's always that element with Yuta where you feel like he's kind of overthinking it, and he's kind of worrying, maybe when he just needs to relax and just play football. And yeah, But I think that when you talk about the defensive unit, I think the thing is we have to sort of put it in his context, in that you had a team who was really working hard in front of them as well. So it allowed them just to... Yeah, it allowed them to kind of concentrate on their jobs, which is being, in a literal sense, the last line of defence, you know, without consistently worrying about people getting behind, being caught square, being caught with nobody in front of that back three, for instance, shielding or helping them out. So again, it feels like the Alamo, because suddenly there's just four bodies running on. So, but yeah, he was much better. I think with Yuta, it's kind of, you've alluded to it several times, it is always concentration issues. And yeah, that was a game where he just stayed in it, didn't he? From the first minute to the last minute, he was just right in that game. So more of that in the future, please, Yuta.
That's the thing. When he does stay switched on, he's one of Town's better players. Mm. You know, he's got a lot of talent. His technique is fantastic. He gets forward well. Like, you know, this was very definitely, and you talk about that unit and the shape, it was a 5-4-1, proper five. It wasn't a 3-4-3. It was a proper 5-4-1, which is always... Literally, it's a sturdy base. You know, it's playing with the stabilisers on, dropping those wing backs back to be proper fullbacks. You're basically putting stabilisers on the team, which I think makes it difficult to score goals, as we saw, and create loads of chances. It was definitely set up to, let's try and get something on the set piece, particularly because Watford's record on set pieces was pretty dreadful. But I think that was a much better from Yuta. And we'll come on to the midfield. I think we'll start in the central midfield because this was an area that I think we were, and definitely Darren Moore said he was most worried about this and said it was the most problematic area coming into the game, with Jack Rodoni out, Jonathan Hogg suspended, David Kasumi missed out in the end as well. Choices really were Ben Wiles, Brahima Diarra, Roman Edmund-Screen and Josh Osterfield, which, no disrespect, but it was, they're all players who had something to prove, I think, in different ways. I thought Wiles and Edmund-Screen absolutely fine on the day and were pretty key in providing that protection that you mentioned. I thought that whole, and we'll come on to the wide players in this as well in a moment, Jaheim Headley and Silver Thomas, but they had a really clear line of four in front of that line of five, and those two did their jobs as well as anyone.
Yeah, I, people know my feelings about Romani. I think he's got his uses, and I think when he's in midfield, he kind of just approached it exactly as Warnock had sort of told him to do when he was using him in midfield last season. And they both stuck to it. It's Wiles' best work in a town shirt by a mile. And yeah, I think obviously I don't think there is a future in a Romani Edmund-Screen and Ben Wiles set midfield two. But I think in this occasion it just kind of worked. There was that tackle first half that Romani put in where he was galloping back. There were several moments where Wiles was sort of immediately turning on the ball and trying to take the pressure off by getting it forward, but getting it forward into good areas. And it was kind of a glimpse of what we want from Wiles, really, in a game where we didn't think we were going to get any of that. I think the thing about Wiles I noticed was that he was very, very tired at the end of it. I think that was a huge shift. And I think the problem we have with Ben Wiles is I'm still not quite sure he's 100% yet. And I think it was a glimpse of what may lay ahead, and a much more positive sign, because I think it would be fair to say he struggled since he's come into town, and it was kind of proof that there is a player there, and at some point hopefully Town are gonna unlock it and gonna see it. But I think they just did a fabulous job in front of that back three. Really, they just, as I said, they let the defenders be defenders. They just concentrated on being midfielders, which sounds ridiculous, but I think sometimes when Hogg is there and he sort of naturally wants to drift in and split defenders, and when it's a three, it can just slightly throw them off kilter. So yeah, it were good. It were very good, that. And I think, I know I'm moving on to someone because I think we both want to talk about somebody else, but Jaheim Headley as well. I've not seen that level of discipline from Jaheim Headley, because he's a great player in terms of he's another one, a bit like Ben Jackson. I feel like I could just repeat all your comments about Ben Jackson sort of playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order. But he kind of just stuck to his task again and protected that flank, did try to get forward at good opportunities and did get into a good space. And it was like, yeah, okay, that's kind of a glimpse of, if you kind of give him a role, and you give him set parameters. I feel like Jaheim Headley is a player who needs parameters to kind of get the best from him. And I just thought, again, it wasn't like a sort of stellar 9 out of 10 performance or anything, but it's just that level of discipline and sticking to task again that we've helped everybody else behind him.
Yeah, I think, talking of, I'll move on to Headley in a moment, but talking of sticking to parameters, I think Ben Wiles probably benefited more from that sort of back to basics approach than anyone, because I think Warnock, when he brought Wiles in, he was playing him as very distinctly as that number 10, almost a second striker. And I think, as we talked about before, so I won't bang on about it again, but I think he probably has struggled a bit to find what his role is, particularly in a team with Jack Rodoni in it. This was a more limited role for him, by Darren Moore's admission. He would ideally like him getting forward more and posing more of a threat on goal, but he had to play sort of that more disciplined role today. But I think actually Ben Wiles probably needed that little reset of just do these basic things well, and then we can then for the next game look at adding to that, which goes to the whole team. But yeah, Headley, I think the reason he likes to play with a set of parameters on, and maybe this is just a tendency to read in something that I sort of know about him as a person, but he is a player who I think needs a bit of, who can struggle with confidence at times, self-confidence. Not in a, he's very down on himself, but I think he almost isn't aware sometimes that he is the strongest and fastest player on the pitch, and that he can just go past people if he wants to, that he does have that capability, and that he can, you know, he's an intelligent player who, once he gets into the final third, will always look for that, for that cutback or a venomous shot he's got on him. This was, I thought that the two wingers had a difficult job, really, because they were each doing one and a half man's job, in that they were covering the flanks a lot, but they were also helping Hudlin both on and off the ball. So one or the other of them was always coming to help Hudlin in the press. If the press then broke down, they then had to get back and help cover their flank. And then on the ball, they were the ones who would sort of, again, doing two jobs. They were one or the other would come and drift close to Hudlin to try and get onto those knockdowns and make sure that he wasn't just standing on his own in 25 yards of space. But also they needed to make sure that Nakayama and Jackson had someone to play off on the overlap. And I thought it was a bit of a thankless job, but obviously we know the amount of praise that Sorba Thomas got for doing it so well. But I think Headley did as well. And I think Headley quite characteristically had a performance where he maybe started a little bit more tentatively, and then by the end of the game, he had his tail up and he was going for it. And it's unfortunate that he might not get it with Utah there and with Josh Cromer potentially coming back. But I do think he could benefit from a run in the side, probably more than any of the youngsters. But it's whether he'll get it, unfortunately. But yeah, he and Sorba Thomas. I mean, what an effort from Sorba.
Yeah, honestly, I texted you, I think, during the second half, and I said, and Jim Chisholm, and said, I've seen him have a lot better games on the ball, but I've never seen him play better off the ball. He put in an unbelievable shift. And if you want to go and see what I'm talking about, if you go to SofaScore and put in Huddersfield Town 0, Watford 0, it will bring up the game. And if you click on the players, you can see some sort of stats about them. But if you look at Sorba's touch map, his heat map, sorry, it's mad, because it's obviously slightly focused on the right, but there's so much in the centre and on the left-hand side, which was just as a result of him, the shift he put in, trying to be part of the press and playing on the cover of his defence as well. I thought it was brilliant, to be honest. I know there were a couple of times he had the chance to put crosses in and he was so tired he hit the first man, and there were other chances he had where he was on the ball and he lost possession, because by the end he had very, very little left in his legs. But the cover, I've never seen him cover like that. I've never seen him cover ground like that in a single game. I've never seen him sort of, there are a lot of times where he was rallying people as well. He was kind of playing as a default captain, and he was helping a couple of the younger lads. You know, we've talked about Sorba's defensive work before, but Ben Jackson was definitely able to play the game he did and as well as he did because of the work that was going on ahead of him from Sorba Thomas. So, yeah, you know, he's had far better games on the ball, but off the ball, I thought he was just amazing. I've never seen him put a shift in like that, and I thought it was the sign of a player who, like, there's been a lot of things said about Darren Moore and various players and all of this sort of thing, a lot of rumours. We're not immune to seeing them, though we just choose not to believe them because there's rarely anything in him. But Sorba's performance was the performance of a man who was playing for his manager there, as far as I'm concerned, because he reined in so many of the things that A, make him a really good player at times, and B, make him a really frustrating player at times, that I just thought he was great, and he deserves kind of the praise that was heaped on him.
I think he's been like that since Darren Moore came in. I think it's, again, we talked about it after the Leeds and Cardiff games. He was, alongside Jack Radoni against Cardiff and basically on his own against Leeds, the player who was still giving that level of effort and that level of, and trying to get everyone else going. And you can't overstate how important that is to get a result like this. I think you need to have had him in those other games going, trying to rally people, because otherwise all 11 players, their heads have dropped, and you go into this Watford game miserable. And he himself said he had been difficult to be around after last week. But I thought it was interesting that the interview that he did with the club, and he didn't explicitly say it, but he basically hinted that Darren Moore had told him, look, I think some of the younger lads look up to you. as well they might. You know, that was his 200th club game, which for his age is a huge number. He's a player who's come from non-league and ended up playing in the World Cup in 2 years. You know, I think some of the sticks Subber gets sometimes, I think people can forget the background he's had, the story that he's had to get here. And inevitably, when you have that level of acceleration from non-league to World Cup, I think you're then going to have a bit of a coming down to earth at some point. And I think he had that last season. But I also think Darren Moore is just a manager who seems to suit him. I don't think Sorba wants, or I don't think a strict disciplinarian is going to get tons and tons out of Sorba Thomas. I think we've used this analogy before, but it's a little bit Alex Ferguson gave Eric Cantona a bit of leeway because he was Eric Cantona. And I think it's kind of the same kind of principle with Sorba Thomas. But I mean, he, within a few weeks of Darren Moore being at the club, was talking about Darren Moore as a father figure. And I think you'd say it's a performance of a player who's playing for his manager. And I think we're seeing it in both word and deed. And I think he's probably, particularly with Rodoni out injured, Town's most important player at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And he, I think when players are back, if he can carry that form and that level of effort in, then we're going to get back to the assist machine Sorba, I'd hope.
Yeah.
But for the minute, just admire the effort is what I would say. And I think that Sorba himself knows he's a divisive player. I think what Town fans want, it's fair to say, is we've talked about it before, they want to see a bit of themselves on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could all see a bit of themselves in Sorba Thomas on the pitch on Saturday, and I think that's a very good thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the polar opposite of last year, where I think he was probably not playing that well, but was getting loads of assists, even if they were all set pieces. That, you know, those goals were keeping Town's heads above water just about. The last three games, he's not had an assist, but he's had the best rating from the fans in all three games. So it's almost the polar opposite. And it does show, yeah, I think you're exactly right. The fans do appreciate seeing that. And I think the final man, who was a minor revelation in this game, particularly first half, obviously got, no pun intended, very leggy towards the end of the first half, to be honest, let alone into the second. But Carl Hudlin, I think, had more touches in the first 45 minutes of a game than any Town striker in probably since Andy Booth.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he's still, you know, again, another player coming from non-league. He's finding his feet. But I thought that was a very promising performance, because I think the 5-4-1 in particular is very prone to a striker looking isolated, which has been the criticism we've had of Town strikers for ages. We've been talking for a while about how they don't really have anyone who can play that lone striker role. But I think, at the very least, Carl Hudlin had put in a performance here that has changed my mind on that. I think he can do that lone striker role. And I'd be interested to see him do it with Caroma, Thomas and Rodoni all buzzing around him looking to get the ball off him.
Yeah. The thing we've never seen him do, really, is play with his back to goal, and which that's what he had to do here. And if you're playing with your back to goal, you've got to either hold the ball up or you've got to win free kicks. It's as simple as that. And he did both really, really well. And I think that there's still a long way to go. Neither of us are sitting here thinking Carl Hudlin is the answer to all Town's striking problems, because in front of goal, I'm not sure he carries enough goal threat. But like you, if you can get players around him, if you had Rodoni doing the Scholes thing, if you've got Caroma cutting inside and playing more as a striker, if you've got Sorba Thomas coming inside a lot more, he suddenly becomes a very interesting part of that. Because one of the things we constantly praise Danny Ward for is that he platforms those he plays with either side. So if Town could get another player who platforms players around him and gets more from them, yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it was a good performance, as I say, with the limitations that he had with, and I think, as I say, Headley and Thomas did everything they could to try and get around him, and Wiles as well, but naturally, with the clean sheet being the priority, it was not quite at 100 miles an hour, shall we say. But I thought it was very encouraging, more for what it shows us for future games, particularly if Danny Ward is, you know, there's a couple of players who Darren Moore has talked about as potentially being back, but Danny Ward and Delano Bergzorg have not been two of them, although we know my feelings on Bergzorg anyway, I wouldn't play him. But Hudlin, I think, has shown, and Kean Harrop was missing for personal reasons, he's meant to be back at the weekend, but I think I would stick with Hudlin from the start.
Oh, I would. I would, absolutely, yeah.
You know he can't play the 90 minutes anyway, so you're going to get Harrop on. You can keep Harrop happy by saying that. But I think if Town want to evolve from here, the natural evolution without sort of in a way that will sort of thaw them out gradually rather than chucking them out the freezer and going, right, go and defrost and risking it all sort of turning into a drippy little puddle like they were before. The obvious evolution would be to move this 5-4-1 into that more of an outright 3-4-3. And I think that is impossible, obviously, without someone who can play as a lone striker. But I think Hudlin has shown, particularly because of 3-4-3, you naturally get that tucking effect with your wingers because it's the wing backs going on the overlap. And in fact, you could even get Jackson coming in as an inverted wing back in that system if he played on the right. But I think Hudlin has shown that he can be a facilitator in that. In that kind of system.
Yeah, definitely. And I was watching the defenders when he came off, you know, and he got cramp and he was just feeling it slightly in his hammy, I think, and he came off. And you could see an audible sense of relief. I think they felt they'd been stuffing rolls of wrapping paper in a wash bag for 60-odd minutes when he was on there. And they were really, really glad to see him go. And it's the first time, let's be honest, I've seen a defender glad that Cole Hodlin's gone off like that. And I think it also shows that, you know, the cameos from the bench, it's very difficult because his cameos from the bench are always at the situation where there's that temptation to go, okay, lump it long to him and he's going to win the ball. And he kind of isn't that player. You know, despite his size, he just isn't that player. And I think you saw a lot more that if you get him with his back to goal, he's quite happy to kind of sort of battle and win and get those free kicks. And yeah, so it gives them another option. And I think, yeah, neither of us are going to pretend that we think he's the man to come and play 35 games and score, you know, 18 goals and all your problems are answered. But I just think, as you said, he may be very useful over the next few weeks to try and transition into something a little bit more than the 5-4-1. I suspect the 5-4-1 is going to come back against Southampton regardless.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't know how he'll set up against Hull. I honestly don't know how. I thought a lot about that, but yeah, I'm not 100% sure myself, but I do think that I think Harrop is really, really good at certain things and not very good at other things. And unfortunately, the things he's not very good at are kind of things that Darren Moore needs at the moment from a striker. So, like you, I think we go, okay, let's get 65 minutes of Cole Hodlin on the pitch and then we can change it and give them a different option.
Yeah, and as I say, hopefully they've got these players coming back. You know, they ended with Brahima Diarra playing the last 15 minutes at centre-forward and he's not a centre-forward, is he, Brahima? So, bit of a thankless job for him, but it was literally, well, who else can we put on? He's the closest we've got. So again, not to keep banging the drum, but it's obvious they need players in January as well as getting the players back from injury. But it's just a case of getting there now, as we keep saying, 10 games to go, 11 really. Yeah, it's a long time to go, but it's nice, even if it's not 3 points, to have a few more positives and to have sort of hopefully put an end to that feeling we talked about last week of fans coming to games and worrying about how many goals they were going to concede this week.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'm going to use the same phrase. You know, if you're going to lose, they need to lose well over the next few weeks. And I think the other thing they need to be conscious of is the fact that Rotherham and QPR and Sheffield Wednesday are giving them the most opportunity to stay out of that bottom three because they keep letting results slip away. I know we're talking just after Rotherham have got a point against Ipswich, but that's their game in hand gone and there's still a 4-point gap, I think. So Town just need to do their part and just keep plugging away. Get what they can. I sort of kind of feel they just need to get what they can get at the minute. Doesn't matter how they get it, just get what you can get. And the next three games are horrible. I think a point would be, genuinely, I think a point would be an all right return out of the next nine, which is, it seems an extremely limited view. And I don't like saying it, but it is genuinely how I feel. But then, like you say, after that, I think a couple of players back, I don't think it looks quite so grim through December, where we can perhaps move the bar a little bit. They're still going to have all the problems we know about. We're still going to talk about all the things we know about. They're not going to score enough goals. They're not going to have enough creativity. They're not going to take enough risks. And they probably still will lose to somebody at least 3-0. But it we can probably move the bar to they really need to get that 4 points out of 9 again, I think.
Yeah, exactly. What's your media recommendation this week, David Hatch?
It's a podcast, and it's called Ghost Story, but fear not, the ghost that is in it is a tiny, tiny part of it. It's about a journalist called Tristan Redman, who's quite a, he's a very engaging talker, who starts looking into his wife's family because of a sort of ghostly incident when he was a kid that sparks a conversation with someone. And it becomes a sort of bit of a whodunit, really. It's only, I think there's 7 episodes, 6 are out. The final episode is next week, but... yeah, I'm not massive on true crime podcasts and that sort of thing, if I'm honest with you, Steve. They don't really... I think who wants to sit and listen to this? But there's something very engaging about this story. And as I said, it's called Ghost Story. I am not into that sort of thing. I am probably in a different sphere to those that are in that into that sort of thing. The ghost that is involved is such a tiny part of the story. Do not let that put you off. But yeah, it's very good, very engaging.
You do love a cryptid, though.
Yes, I do, yeah. Bigfoot, love him.
Mine is the TV show No Activity, which is all on iPlayer. It's an Aussie sitcom about it's a cop comedy, basically. Copperdy, is that a word?
No.
Okay. But it's the two main people from Calling from Accounts are both in it. So if you watched Calling from Accounts, and if you haven't watched Calling from Accounts, that's also all on iPlayer. So what you're doing, 2 recommendations for the price of one there. But yeah, that's mine, because I think there's lots of people like yourself, David, who watched Colin, really enjoyed it, and didn't know No Activity existed or was on iPlayer. So
no.
Top tip.
Yeah, I am. This is one of yours. I am actually going to go and this might make up for your Gex recommendation the other week.
And thank you as well to St. Thomas's School for having me yesterday morning for to join Darren Moore. I say that as though I was standing up with him. I wasn't. I was standing at the back of the hall watching. Yeah, that was interesting. And it's 2.5 million breakfasts that the Town Foundation have served as part of their breakfast club, which is obviously superb. I know that it is... not the most interesting topic for a lot of people, but I think it is worth highlighting this stuff, because I think if Town weren't doing this kind of thing, you'd be asking why they weren't. So we're celebrating when they do, and that they do.
Yes, I agree.
Bye.